The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rock,
just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
What do you think?
Just
I
like
love that. It. That was great. Thank
Perfect
you.
Way to start a show. Welcome to a Wednesday. And actually, the reason I chose that intro for today is because I'm sort of straddling two worlds today. We've got this show, right? We're live from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And then at 6:30 tonight, I am taping an interview with Steven Van Zandt, Little Steven, Miami Steve, or as he's now calling himself on his new book, Stevie Van Zandt, whatever he calls himself. Hey, it's Silvio from The Sopranos. Steve Van Zandt, has this book out, and I've been trying to get him for an interview, and we're going to tape it tonight. So I've got like a split screen in my brain. Half of it is in, rock and roll world, and half of it is in opposite world. This world that we are living in, where a dictator, an evil dictator, has invaded another country who did nothing to the evil dictator other than exist and not be under his rule. It's really horrific. So I know many of you are concerned, as I am, about my new friend. So earlier this week, I placed one of my phone calls, called Kyiv, and I reached a hostel, a hotel. It's a cheap hotel in the middle of Kyiv called Friends Forever, written in English. So I had a feeling it was a good place to call. And a woman named Tatiana answered. And Tatiana, turns out, owns the place. Well, we spoke very briefly, and now we have been communicating via the Telegram app. And thank you to the listeners who told me when I was trying to figure out what she was saying. Should I text you? And she mentioned Telegram a couple of times. I hadn't even realized that it was an encrypted text app, but it is, and it works really well. So the problem is, she hasn't been above ground for long enough for a phone call. So yesterday I shared with you some of our conversation, some of our exchange, when she had been warned that we were going to talk. She was going to come on the show at this time yesterday, but at about 3:30, about 90 minutes earlier, the air raid sirens went off and they had to get below ground. And she doesn't have a signal underground. So I didn't hear from her all day, all night last night. And I woke up this morning, as I do at like 5:30, still hadn't heard from her. And then at about what time here, I can tell you at 6:10 this morning, I sent her a message. I said, I've just woken to horrible pictures from Kyiv. They bombed hospitals, schools, and apartments. Of course, I'm thinking about you and hoping you are safe. And 10 minutes later, she responded. She said, thank you, my dear. We're fine. Just wrote you a message yesterday and rockets flew over us, right? On the way to Kyiv, we were not allowed to leave until morning. Okay. So I wrote, thank you for letting me know. I was very worried. And then I didn't hear from her. It was a few hours. And I wrote back again. I said, can we try to talk today? Or are you moving somewhere? Would you please let me know what you're doing? I hope you don't mind. But you're my friend in Ukraine right now, and I want to know that you're safe. And at 3:13, that was at, what time was that? That was at 12:52 that I sent that. At 3:13, she responded, and she said, we are underground. And then the next message is minus one floor. And I said, oh, no, still? What's happening? Are you still in Kyiv? Still at the hostel or have you moved? And she said, I went out to write. It's standing on the stairs. I need to descend. And I said, okay, we're thinking about you. My heart hurts. Know that the world is with you. And she just said, we left 30 kilometers from Kyiv. We are hiding. And then with an emoji, you know, scared face. And I just said, good. I hope you're somewhere safe, sending love and safe thoughts. I will keep in touch with her. I've already given, you know, Brian Karam, who was on the show yesterday, a great journalist who's on his way over there, which freaks me out, gave him all her contact information. She's no longer at the hostel. Obviously, they moved. They're somewhere 30 kilometers away, but hopefully they're safe, and Brian hopefully can make contact with her. Hi, who's calling from the 202 area code?
Hi, my name is Rafael. I'm calling from actually Baltimore, Maryland.
I'm sorry, wait, you're calling from Maryland? Okay, hold on. It's hard to hear you, so slow down. Yeah. Go ahead.
Hold on. Let me get your speakerphone, ma'am. Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
No, my pleasure. No, I listen to your show all the time, and I'm actually kind of like in the same boat like you with somebody who has family in Ukraine and then in Kharkiv.
Uh-huh.
They're in desperate part of the eastern part of the country, the border being bombed. And they're fine, but I'm also kind of worried. In fact, when I was tweeting with them today, I was almost crying because, you know, the family, he's having high spirits, but, you know, but it kind of stinks, excuse me. I don't want to use any foul language during your show. You know, so I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Yeah, a lot of us are worried. And you know what? Look, Tatiana is somebody I just met in a brief phone call,
mm-hmm.
but she's now my mm-hmm. person over there. And I really think...
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's to help me, but to feel like I'm connected with someone there who I can keep tabs mm-hmm, on. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. It's obviously a psychological mm-hmm. tool. It's helping me mm-hmm. cope a mm-hmm. little more rather than, you know, worrying about the whole nation, which I am. If I can mm-hmm. concentrate mm-hmm. on one yeah. person, it's my mm-hmm. way to deal with it. This is, you know, this is yeah. really a horrific time in history. Just yeah. looking yeah, at yeah. Putin and what he's capable of. And all the speculation mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. him that his health is not right, that he's somebody mm-hmm. wrote to me and said they think he has Parkinson's and that makes you like mm-hmm. Hallucinate or something. Look, I'm not here mm-hmm. to diagnose him. I think there yeah. may be something really wrong with him. There certainly mm-hmm. is a screw loose. We know that. And mm-hmm. it's like mm-hmm. I feared that Trump had access to nukes. I'm really afraid that Putin has access to nukes.
God save us all, man. Don't even mention that. One last thing, and I don't want to take more of your time because I love your show very much.
Thank you.
I'm from Puerto Rican, and politicians used to say it's easy when you put a face behind the numbers. So
right.
I think that's what, in your case and my case, we're putting a face behind those numbers. You know, it becomes concrete instead of
right.
abstract.
It's an actual person politics. Who I can identify. I haven't yeah. seen her. I don't know what she looks like, but hopefully yeah. Brian will get to see her when he's over there and send back yeah. pictures. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much. I'll keep listening to your show. Okay. Have a good one.
Okay.
Man.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling. And yeah, see, I guess I'm not alone in that. You want to make a human connection. It's, you know, it's what I always try to do when there's a major event like this around the world. First time I did it, frankly, was during the Arab Spring when all the people were out in Tahrir Square. And I called a hotel just off of Tahrir Square. One of these days, I'll pull that out and I'll share it with you because it is, you know, it's what was happening then. And I got a hotel clerk who really talked to me. It was fascinating, but on a number of levels. But in the case of Tatiana, I genuinely want to help her. And I feel so, so helpless. I got to thank listener Tamara, who just moments before I went on the air sent me an email with a link to, and I hate that it's a TMZ video, because I believe me, I do not go out of my way to watch TMZ or give them publicity or anything. But in this case, they got a hold of this. President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke today. I think he was speaking to the Ukrainian people today as opposed to the last time when he spoke from the same place and he was talking to the Russian people and he actually gave the address in Russian. I'm not good. I learned a little bit of Russian before I went to adopt my daughter from Kazakhstan because there they speak Kazakh and Russian. In Ukraine, they speak Ukrainian and Russian. But I don't know enough to tell you if he's speaking Ukrainian or Russian. I don't know. But thankfully, they didn't. Usually you can hear the voice of a translator, you know, dubbing in the English translation. In this case, they didn't. But they have captions. And so I transcribed it so I can read it for you. So you'll watch the video if you're watching a video feed, a video stream. You'll hear the audio, but I'll bring it down like they do with the UN. So, and I will read to you what he's saying. Again, this is from today. I don't know how long ago, but again, today, Wednesday, March 2nd, Vladimir Zelensky speaking here. All right. Let me start the videotape. And there he is. There he is. Whoops. He says, good health to you, united country. I did not accidentally say united. The seventh day of this terrible war began, a war we feel the same way. During this time, we have had more unity than for over 30 years before. At first, we were equally scared. Then we felt equally painful. And now we do not care. Except for victory, except for the truth, except for peace, except for the tranquility we want to achieve, except for the lives of our people for whom we are worried, except for Ukraine. We were all bombed in Kyiv last night, and we all died again in Baban Yar from a missile strike. Although the whole world promises constantly never again, for any normal person who knows history, Baban Yar is a special part of Kyiv, a special part of Europe, a place of prayer, a place of remembrance for the 100,000 people killed by the Nazis. The place of old Kyiv cemeteries. Who should you be to make it a target for missiles? You are killing Holocaust victims for the second time. On the first day of the war, Uman was brutally bombed, where hundreds of thousands of Jews come every year to pray. Then Baban Yar, where hundreds of thousands of Jews were executed. I am now addressing all the Jews of the world. Don't you see what's happening? That is why it is very important that millions of Jews around the world do not remain silent right now. Nazism is born in silence. So shout about the killings of civilians. Shout about the killings of Ukrainians. What then if Baban Yar was attacked? What other military facilities threaten Russia? What other NATO bases? St. Sophia Cathedral? Lavra? St. Andrew's Church? Whatever they dream of there, damn them, because God is with us. My dears, the time will come when we will be able to sleep. But it will be after the war, after the victory, in a peaceful country as we need, and which we have always appreciated and which we have never destroyed. I ask all of you to take care of your loved ones. Take care of your brothers in arms. I admire you. The whole world admires you, from Hollywood stars to politicians. Today, you, Ukrainians, are a symbol of invincibility. A symbol that people in any country can become the best people on earth at any moment. And he ends it by saying, glory to Ukraine. Glory to Ukraine. Talk about powerful. I will link to that video on the blog today along with the show where I posted today. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/3-2-22. I grow more and more impressed by Volodymyr Zelensky each time I see him. He did a thing. He did two. There were two other videos I have of him since the war started. This one that I'm about to play for you is from a couple of days ago. He was with talking with Channel 4 News out of London, and they he was asked. Well, it was when that Holocaust memorial was being bombed. See what he was talking about in there when we were mentioning Babin Yar. Well, you'll hear. I mean, you heard. It's a huge Holocaust memorial inside Ukraine. And what's more, I don't know if ironic is the word. I guess, don't you think? A little too ironic that Vladimir Putin, you know, he's so Trumpian, or maybe it's Putin-esque, and Trump was the mimic here. Either way, you know, they belong together. But that Putin should use as an excuse, we're going to denazify Ukraine. Well, you know what, Putin? You know what, Putin? You know what? I say to them, and holy shit, I don't know what thing I have up here. Do I have my song here? I don't have the fuck you song up. Here we go. All right, so that's for Vladimir Putin. So anyway, this is again, President Zelensky speaking with Channel 4 News out of London, who found him, somehow got to meet with him at this bunker, the same place where CNN spoke with him just a day or two earlier, and I'll share that with you in a moment as well.
Work and sleep, that's it.
Can you see your family?
No.
Your kids?
No, I can't.
When was the last time you saw them?
Before this war.
Wow.
Thank you.
I mean, just one last question. You may have already
answered. No, not before this war. No, 3 days ago. The middle part of this war. Yeah.
I'd like to inform that now it's bombing Babin Yar.
Now there, this is when Babin Yar was being bombed.
Yes.
He was just told memorial. That it was being bombed.
Yes, the memorial they started building after 80 years of this tragedy. It's second Babin Yar.
That is Russia. My congratulations.
My congratulations. Obviously, speaking a bit sarcastically, he sounds kind of perturbed. But you can see he's surrounded by soldiers with weapons who are they're safeguarding him. Pretty. He said one time he's seen his family once since the war began. Let me just play for you since we're doing it and while we can. This is the CNN report. So, again, this was recorded yesterday. Inside that same bunker, a CNN correspondent got in and was able to speak again with President Zelensky. And here's just a short clip from that. Look, I want to hear this man as often as we can. He's just a fucking hero. Okay, here we go.
Delegation to meet the Russians for talks.
Yeah.
Did anything substantial come out of that? Is there any hope? As the world watches for diplomacy,
they decided to begin to speak about this situation, and I really wanted, and I asked them. So you have to speak. First of all, everybody has to stop fighting and to go to that point from where it was beginning. Yeah. Yes, it began. Six days ago.
Yes.
I think there are principal things you can do it, and that is very important moment. If you'll do this, and if those side is ready, it means that they are ready for the peace. If they don't ready, it means that you're wasting time.
And do you think you're wasting your time, or do you think they're ready?
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. Wow.
Well, speaking from his very fortified bunker there, surrounded by military forces, sandbags, you know, deep underground.
And that's the extent of that clip. My heart goes out to these people. Again, they were just going about their lives, and Zelensky seems like just a really decent guy. And I thought that when we first met him, back when Donald Trump tried to extort him. Remember, Donald Trump tried to extort him for the weapons he needed to defend himself. You know why, how Donald Trump would send him the weapons he needed? If he would go out and say that they were launching an investigation into Joe Biden over his son's business practices in Ukraine, which was just absolute bullshit. That was not true, but that's what Trump wanted him to do. Wanted him to lie, and he has too much integrity to do that. Oh, my God. I got to tell you. So, I'll keep following. I'll keep reaching out to Tatiana. I'll keep following the news. It's horrific. That's the only way to put it. And a news alert just came over from, let's see if I can find it, from, I believe, the Washington Post that says... God, I get my email is just throttled. That basically the first region inside Ukraine has fallen into Russian hands, and it is in the east. It's where the caller a few minutes ago was talking about. And there's a bombardment going on there. You know, I should put up this map so I can look at the names of the places. And I can't even tell. I'm looking at a map now. I can't read. All I know is it's not bad. Kherson, I think, which is right near Odessa, and they're headed to Odessa. I just have to hope that this is all going to fall apart. You know, there's a bunch of videos I came upon on YouTube. There's an account. It's UATV English. And what UATV stands for is the Ukrainian English television channel. And so what they're doing is when they capture these Russian soldiers, who in most cases are kids, they're frankly young kids. They don't know what they're doing there. And so they're interviewing them. They're talking to them. Hold on. I want to see if I can get the last one. So this one, there's two young men who on this, video, you can hear the first one is talking to his mother on the phone, his mother in Russia. And you do hear the translation over his voice. I'm just going to tell you what you're listening for, though. This guy is telling his mother they lied to him. He was supposed to be doing military exercises. And all of a sudden, he finds himself in Ukraine as an aggressor bombing people, and that he's now being held captive. He's a prisoner of war, but he's being treated better than he was being treated in Russia by his Russian superiors. This is astounding. Listen to this.
Hello, my friend.
Hello. Hello, mom.
Mom.
Hi. Did you recognize me? I'm in the territory of Ukraine. I have been taken captive, but I'm all right. I'm on the territory of Ukraine. I'm a prisoner of war.
Huh.
Hey, mom. Hey. Please listen to me carefully. I've been treated well.
I'm being treated
well. Please don't worry about me.
Don't worry about me.
But you have to contact my unit. Write it somewhere down, please. Say to them that I have been taken captive on the territory of Ukraine. When they sent us here, they said that it was going to be a peacekeeping operation on the territory of
DPR
and LPR. But in fact, we broke out the war.
We broke out the war.
I mean, we acted as aggressors. We are bombing cities, mom. Share this information if you can. Mom, listen, please. They won't let me go because I'm in captivity. Can you get that I came here as an aggressor? That's why they won't let me go. Please do what I have asked.
And here's another man. who's just talking to the interviewer.
My name is Petro Kanton Andreevich. I was born on the 5th of July, 2000.
2000.
Military unit 91706.
He's younger
Division
than my kid.
Number 150, 2nd Regiment. I'm a senior sniper. My rank is private. We took part in drills. After some 2 weeks, we were sent to the border with Ukraine. They said we were going to guard the border. But then suddenly, at night, we crossed the border. We reached and stayed in some village. And we had no choice. After we had crossed the border, if we would have declined the order, we would have been sentenced, after returning home, to the sentence from 15 to 25 years of imprisonment.
Wow.
This is almost all the life. Here we are treated better than by our own command.
You hear that?
I want to say to my mom, wait for me, I will return.
Wow. So again, those two Russian soldiers who were captured by the Ukrainians are being held, and they said being treated better than than by their commanders. But there's more of those. There's a bunch of them. The YouTube channel is AETV. AUTV. AUTV English. Again, I'll link to them. I'll put a link to their YouTube channel, because there are a bunch of videos like this. Now, I know the cynic in me says, okay, well, it's Ukrainian propaganda. They've got their prisoners. But that sounded pretty genuine to me. That sounded like those kids, and they are kids, were for real. All right, the phones. Hi, someone calling from 805 in California. Who is this?
This is Dan. I'm calling from Goleta.
Hey, Dan.
Nicole.
Yes, how are
Just real quick, Ukraine story, like reaching out to people. I'm a cyclist. I'm old, but I'm still cycling bicycles. And last year in April, I bought a frame from someone who sells European frames in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to this guy a couple of days ago, and I said, hey, are you okay? And he sent back this email. I just wanted, like, these people are incredible.
Yeah.
Thanks for the support. Everything is fine in my city. There's water and electricity. Only one airport is broken. I stocked up on food and sit at home, hoping that negotiations between the leaders of the countries will take place soon and they'll be able to agree on peace. People should be able to negotiate. For this, we are given language and reason. People shouldn't fight. And so that was like his response a few days ago, and I've tried to reach out again, but haven't been able to get through. There's been no response.
Do you know what
his shape he's in?
Do you know what city he's in? Do you know what city he's in?
No, it was like kind of more towards the west. He wasn't in Kiev. Like, I tried to reach out again, saying when he sent the bicycle frame, like, it had the return address, but we couldn't find, like, exactly. You know, that was like months ago.
Right.
So anyway, so some part, you know, anyway.
But yeah, but you know what the problem is? They're not just in the east anymore, because obviously they bombed Kyiv last night and Lviv, which is right across the border from Poland. So they're you know, they're going for the whole country.
You know, you talk about reaching out, and yeah, it's true. It's like you're trying to make contact with somebody. You realize, oh my gosh, I bought a frame from somebody in Ukraine, and how's the guy doing? And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. So,
you know what? It is
a cup of food and sitting in his apartment.
Yes. Yeah. And and now with the internet, it's a much smaller world. You know, look, you've heard me do this all the time. I call places around the planet. You can do that. As Joy in the chat room learned when she tried to, you know, when I couldn't connect with the hotel the other day and she called to Poland. You can do it. And I'll tell you what, if you have Skype, they have, you know, you get a Skype out number, and it's not expensive at all. It's easy to reach out and touch somebody's hand. Make this world a better place if you can. I mean, there's a reason it's a song lyric, right? We're human beings. And I think the less we think of it as numbers of people who've been killed in another part of the world by a madman, and more like these are human beings, that's Tatiana, that's whoever, maybe it'll give some people a different perspective on it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was my, because I did the same thing. I just wanted to contact, like, in person, like, you know, like a human contact.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort of trying to get through this guy again, but I thought that comment he made, people, for this we were given language and reason to shouldn't fight. That's how he ended. And it's just some random individual in Ukraine, and he's right? speaking like a philosopher.
Yeah.
He sells bicycle frames.
Yeah. Well, that's what they've got right now is the philosophy. And I know I could tell just from my text exchanges with Tatiana that they appreciate it. It's think about it. She's stuck underground, a sub basement, trying to stay away from the bombs.
I identify
right.
completely.
Yeah. So,
okay. Well, thanks, Nicole. Anyway, if I get in touch with this guy, I'll get back to you.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Dan.
Okay.
All right. Take
okay,
care.
Bye bye.
All right. So, you know, look, I came on the air as I always do at 5 o'clock, and I launched right into the Ukrainian stuff. I didn't even talk about the State of the Union address, and my guest is standing by. So let me give you my 60-second review. Joe Biden delivered a well-written speech. He missed the boat on a couple of things. One, when he talked about the things that didn't get done, that he said he could still possibly get done before Joe Manchin shut him down again, what he didn't do was articulate the fact that the reason those things didn't get done, like paid family leave and preschool and free college and all the other things that we need to get this country back on track, is because the Republicans voted against him. Yeah, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin suck, and you couldn't put the blame on them. But it's not only the two of them. There are also 50 Republicans who voted against every single measure there, who would not vote for the Build Back Better bill. So he didn't put the blame where the blame deserves to be. He needs to articulate that. Now, he did call out a couple of things. Good. But he missed that opportunity. The other thing is nothing that he could have corrected. Joe Biden just sucks at public speaking. At a time when we need a charismatic leader, and I hate to say it, but this country is obviously a little too concerned with, you know, with show business, with appearances, with the production values, instead of listening to what he was saying, the ugliness that I saw on social media was all about, he's senile. Meanwhile, you know, these are the people who support the former guy who, if you want to talk senile, I could talk your head off. So we can't fix the fact that Joe Biden is a lousy speaker. I was more happy with the speech than unhappy with it, but it didn't go far enough. And again, he needed to pat himself on the back big time, and he kind of did, but it's not enough to pull him out of the, I hate to say it, the polling free fall that he's in, and it scares the crap out of me. All right, with that, I want to welcome our guest. So yesterday we spoke with Brian Karam, who is a career journalist, and he's done it all. Started in radio, done newspapers, done magazines, and now he's headed off to Ukraine. More power to him. Here's the thing. There's so much going on in the news today, not only today, but in this era, that it's difficult to figure out what to cover and what to pass on when I only have a one-hour show each day, right? I have to make editorial decisions when deciding what to fit into my What's News report or what to fit into the show. Today, I don't know if I was wrong. I figured everyone else is talking about the State of the Union. I could still talk about it tomorrow, but I'm only dealing with 1 hour a day. But in the grand scheme of things, do you wonder what stories are neglected by the media at large, especially the corporate media, who are unfortunately controlled by the ratings, circulation, click, money metrics? Got it? Well, wonder no longer, because that's what Project Censored is kind of all about. And our guest today is Andy Lee Roth. He is the associate director of Project Censored, and they've just released their State of the Free Press 2022. Andy, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Nicole. It's a pleasure to join you.
I got to ask, any relation to David?
In high school, I tried to convince all my classmates that David was my uncle and that I partied with him every weekend. I grew up in Southern California. So that was plausible, but I think my thick eyeglasses and braces probably undermined my claims that that I was hanging out with, you know, Van Halen's lead singer every weekend.
Well, you got the name, Andy Lee Roth. So first thing I thought of, because my mind goes weird places. Anyway, tell us a little bit about Project Censored. I know who you are, but the people listening might not.
Yeah, Project Censored is a 45-year-old news watch organization that has kind of a dual aim. The first is to educate the public about the importance of a truly free press for being informed and engaged citizens and community members. And the second is the way we do that is by tracking important but underreported news stories, stories that are covered by the independent press, but are either ignored altogether or marginalized or covered in partial, incomplete, perhaps biased ways by the corporate news media. And so the project has existed since 1976. It was founded at Sonoma State University in California. Mm-hmm. And today, part of my role as associate director of the project is I coordinate the project's campus affiliates program, which involves several hundred students and professors at about two dozen colleges and universities across the country in a collective effort to identify, vet, and promote these important but underreported news stories.
Wow. So this collection, this book you just put out, has, if I'm looking at it correctly, I believe three parts, basically. First part is the 25 most important but underreported news stories of the last year, 2020 to 2021. You write, each of these stories has been censored in the broad sense established by Project Censored founder Carl Jensen, who defines censorship as the suppression of information, whether purposeful or not, by any method, including bias, omission, underreporting, or self-censorship that prevents the public from fully knowing what's happening in its society. So it's not, you're not saying that they're not talking about it at all, but that it is underreported or that there's this implicit bias in it. So when you hear them talk about it, they're talking about it with a viewpoint. They're not giving you the objective facts. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so some of the stories on our annual top 25 lists are simply not covered at all in the corporate news media. They're blockaded stories. You can think of them. But then there are a number of other stories on our list where there is corporate news coverage. And we track this in the book. And I should add here, we'd love it if people would get the book. That's sales of the book are partly how we support the work we do as a nonprofit. But all these stories are available online at the Project Censored website entirely free of charge. Some of these other stories involve, there is corporate news coverage of the story, but important facts or perspectives are omitted, so that you're not necessarily getting the full story, even though that might be invisible to you as you're reading, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post's coverage of the topic. And still other stories, we find independent news coverage partnered with corporate news coverage where the corporate news coverage frames the story as a matter of opinion or editorial judgment. So important news stories are relegated to the op-ed section of the paper rather than making the front page. And finally, we have stories where we can identify, say, one or two instances of high quality corporate news coverage on the story topic. But that minuscule bit of coverage in the 24/7 barrage of news is so disproportionate to the significance of the story that it seems fair to conclude that most Americans probably will not have heard of that story unless they saw it sourced from one of the independent news outlets that we're highlighting as an important go-to for real news.
Got it. Okay, we're going to get back to this in a second. I just want to say the other parts are, there's junk, what you call junk food news, which is sensationalized trivia that often displaces quality news reporting on more significant public issues. We've all seen that. You see it every, you know, we'll watch like the NBC Nightly News and they'll have the story. And I'm like, really? With everything that's going on, they're using up precious minutes of their 22, if they even have 22 minutes in a half hour newscast to give the news. To do that, that's the junk food news. And then you talk about news abuse, which refer to media outlets' minimization, exaggeration, or obscuring of key elements of stories, amounting to false representation by their omissions of the truth. Would you say that Fox, not news, because I can't use the name as they say it, it won't come out of my mouth in that manner, they are a news abuse channel. They're not a news channel.
Yeah, they I'd say, you know, without being wary of overgeneralizing,
yes,
much of what passes as news on Fox it would qualify by Project Censored's definition as news abuse. These are stories that they're significant stories, so they're different than junk food news stories.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so spun that the primary point of the story is probably lost. And one way to think about these stories is by counterpoint. I mean, obviously the news abuse stories stand in contrast to the kind of journalism we're highlighting in the top 25 story mm-hmm. lists every year. But also I would think of them in reference to the Society of Professional Journalists' 4 guidelines for ethical journalism. They're really simple. And the way I think of these is not that they are, that they're not just for journalists,
mm-hmm.
that we as news consumers might also think about these 4 criteria as we assess, is this a story I want to share on my social media account? Is this a story I want to give legs to through, you know, my Facebook or my Twitter? So number one, seek the truth and report it, right? The truth,
mm-hmm.
right? Factually based, evidence-based reporting. Second, minimize harm. A lot of what passes as news, not just from Fox, but many corporate outlets, right? A lot of what passes as junk food news, tales of celebrity humiliation, and also what passes as news abuse could probably be stopped in its tracks if the people reporting it and those of us who read and then circulate it took heed of that second principle, minimize harm.
Mm-hmm.
Act independently. Right. That means verifying your sources, not just accepting that it's true because someone you like or admire or respect said it so. And then fourth, being accountable and being transparent. Right. A big thing about Project Censored and the analysis that we do coming out of a academic background, as I mentioned earlier, we're really big on the idea that claims need to be backed by evidence. And the more controversial or alluring the claims are, the stronger the evidentiary basis needs to be. And I would say that with my students in the class when we would be working on beginning to research some of the stories that students across the country vet on the way to becoming candidates for each year's top 25 story list. And I would say that as a matter of conversation among friends or in the context of our conversation today, as just good practice in terms of being a media literate citizen, a media literate community member.
And right now, with the proliferation of social media, and everyone is spreading stories, and I'm using that word on purpose because they're not necessarily news stories. Some of them are made up stories posing as news stories. It's up to you before you share something that you think is a news story to... What I always say is that my shorthand is consider the source. Look mm-hmm. where it came from. If it's some fly-by-night news organization that you've never heard of, and this is the only place you've seen it, then throw it away. Unless you can verify it with multiple sources, it's not real. If just one outlet, some place you never heard of, publishes a story, doesn't mean it's true. I read it on the internet. Doesn't mean it's true. So people who are sharing these things on Facebook really need to do a little homework before you hit the share button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it behooves all of us. We're we're, as I mentioned earlier, we're bombarded by 24/7 news, or what is presented to us as news. Mm-hmm. There's nonstop pungent hot takes, you know, and there's a tendency to think like, oh, well, we're not participating unless we're engaged in the same activities at the same speed as the pundits and the 24/7 news, you know, flow. Part of what the project is about is taking a step back from that and encouraging people to do the same themselves. So we're not a 24/7 news cycle organization. You could think of us more as a 52/12, right? We take the State of the Free Press 2022, takes a look at what we can observe looking back at the last 12 months, the last 52 weeks of what the so-called free press in the United States has been doing, whether that's the corporate news media or the independent alternatives. And I think when you take a step back from that, you see things, you can, there's the possibility to observe patterns and to recognize trends that are invisible when you're in the, that are invisible when you're in the fray of that constant torrent of right. information. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's very important. Obviously, Project Censored can't, we can't do everything in terms of fulfilling people's news needs. There still is a need, I believe, and I understand and appreciate for breaking news. And that's not, we're not good at that. That's not what we try to do. But what the project does is, I think, something that the founder, Carl Jensen, coined this term, news inflation. He said his idea was, we have more and more news, but it seems to be worth less and less. Huh. Right. Uh-huh. So you could think about Project Censored as a concerted effort involving literally hundreds of people across the country and around the world to say, this story, these topics are worth the time it will take you to digest them. Right. The stories yep. that are in our top 25 list may be challenging in terms of our political beliefs, even our kind of deep-seated psychological needs we have to believe certain things about who we are as a country, as a people, as individuals. The stories may be challenging in that way, but when we bring them forward, they've undergone no fewer than 5 independent rounds of review. Wow. We know that those stories are serious reports that are factually based, transparently sourced. We know that there's stories of social significance. They often deal with systemic social problems, which the corporate news media is not very good at dealing with. I right. can say more about that, why that might be so. And we know that these stories have not been well covered by the corporate media because we've, as I say, through at least 5 separate rounds of vetting, we've documented whatever coverage we can find in the corporate press of these stories. So they're important but underreported stories that the you know people ought to know more about to be engaged citizens and active community members.
Gotcha. So again, the website is projectcensored.org, and you'll be able to see, we're going to talk about some of the top 25 stories from the last year that you fall in this category. You can read them all there. You can also order the book through the website. So projectcensored.org. I'll also put the link on the blog where I post the show. Before I get into these specific stories, though, I want to ask why things are different now than they used to be. And at the beginning of the book, you do talk a bit about the fairness doctrine, which I had the discussion with Brian Karam about yesterday. Look, I come from the world of radio. I was working in Los Angeles radio, actually, when... You know, I was at KLOS when I got a yeah. message, a letter from AFTRA, the union, saying this thing is coming. You got to beware. It's going to change everything. And boy, did it. And if we go back even further, and my time frame might be off here, but 60 Minutes used to be, it was, still is, the preeminent news show on CBS and probably for all of television. The news division used to be totally separate from entertainment, not only at CBS, but in all these broadcast companies. There was the news division, there was entertainment. News wasn't expected to turn a profit. But then 60 Minutes got really popular. And somebody said, oh, That show's getting ratings. We can charge a lot for advertising. Is that what changed everything?
Certainly, advertising revenues explain the current crisis of journalism. And I think it has changed how probably has had a fundamental change on kind of reporters and editors' day-to-day work routines and professional decisions about what counts as news.
Mm-hmm. Because their priority is the page views, the clicks, the mm-hmm. ratings, the circulation, right? I mean, it's all right. about the bottom line.
And there used to be more of a figurative firewall between mm-hmm. the news division and, say, the advertising and business side of any given news outlet. And though those, you know, in the image of a wall, like those walls have been long since knocked down. The version that we're seeing now that is all being done, not necessarily even directly by human beings at this point, but by AI, by artificial intelligence driven algorithms, is what's known as a block listing of advertising. So block listing refers to the idea of that there are lists of words and phrases that advertisers don't want their content associated with. And they will look at, say, the content of a news website or a magazine or a newspaper, and the algorithm will check for any of those words that are specified on the advertiser's block list. And mm-hmm. If any of those words appear, the algorithm will block advertising from that content. And there's an important report that came out just about a year ago now in an outlet called The New Humanitarian, showing how advertising block lists, these kind of hidden checks on how advertising dollars are allocated for news coverage, are actually stifling the reporting of humanitarian crises.
Hmm.
Right. So that advertisers don't want their product associated with any kind of reporting that uses the term famine,
wow.
or that uses language regarding to racial differences or religious orientations or sexual orientation. The block list will prevent those advertisers' content from showing up in any news in connection with any news reporting related to the lists on that particular advertiser's block list. So that's a new form of gatekeeping that affects news organizations, not in terms of what news they report. They can still report whatever they want. But if you're aware as an editor of block lists, you're going to start to perhaps skew the kind of reporting you're doing in order to not run afoul of, say, Microsoft's block list or MasterCard's
right.
block list.
You know, this is a perfect segue into one of the top, the 25 stories that lead your Project Censored list for the last year that I can attest to. I've lived this. So there's tons of them. I mean, from grave threats to Amazon rainforest, from domestic industries and global capital. There's corporate media sideline health experts during pandemic. There's U.S. factory farming, a breeding ground for the next pandemic. Lots of stories that you want to hear about. But then we get to number 17. Mm-hmm. Number 17, the headline is, new wave of independent news sources demonized by Google-owned YouTube.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to my world. And I read the story, and I'm right there with them, and I didn't go back and look at exactly when, but I have been demonetized and banned from broadcasting live on YouTube for 3 months at a time because some bot went back through. I've got over 10 years worth of programs archived on YouTube. And in some of them, you know what, in a newscast, I use a 10-second clip of a song that they decide somebody else owns, which they probably do. I'd be happy to pay the copyright fees on it, but there is no mechanism to do that. Instead, they block me from broadcasting, but they don't tell you what the offending content is. Now, on a daily basis, almost, I get content ID where they take any revenue I might earn from advertising on YouTube, which is minuscule anyway, but they commandeer it on behalf of some other company without telling me what it was and who flagged it and what the content is. And sometimes they'll delete the video without ever telling me what the offending content was. So they do this all the time. And yes, I am a progressive news outlet. I do a talk show. I do other things too, but I come from a very progressive viewpoint. Getting me. Mm-hmm. This is a story that the corporate media did not cover.
Right. Yeah, this is one of our stories. I mentioned earlier some of the stories that appear to have been completely blockaded in the corporate news media. And this our number 17 story, the new wave of independent news sources demonetized by Google and YouTube, is exactly one such story. This story was reported in by Consortium News by Caitlin Johnstone. And I just want to read one of the quotes from the Consortium News report on this. Johnstone writes, "The general population is herded onto huge monopolistic social media platforms offering democratization of information where your voice can be heard.
Right.
And then those platforms proceed to censor on an increasing amount of political speech." And this is exactly what we're seeing. So it's not just the Nicole Sandler show.
Nope.
There are a number of progressive independent outlets that have been hit by... They've either been demonetized, which makes them non-viable as commercial enterprises, or they've been completely blockaded altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So these are programs like the Progressive Soapbox, the Convo Couch, Frank Analysis, Hannah Reloaded. A few years ago, my colleague Avram Anderson and I were looking specifically at how YouTube was either demonetizing or deplatforming LGBTQ content creators. And there have actually been class action suits on behalf of those content creators.
Mm-hmm.
They have lost those suits every time that this has gone before before a court. The judge has ruled that, well, YouTube, there's no First Amendment violation because YouTube isn't the government.
Right, it's a private company. They can do what they
want. It's a private company. They can do what they want. And the goal of these class action lawsuits, as Avram Anderson and I were talking about in an article we published in an outlet called The Index on Censorship, one of the goals of the class action lawsuits against YouTube by these LGBTQ content creators was to get YouTube's algorithm to be not made public, but to simply be to simply have an independent third party have access to the algorithm to see whether it baked into it was anti-LGBTQ biases. Because right now what we don't know, it's a kind of black box. We don't know how those algorithms actually work. We can see the effects of their operation in terms of patterns in what kinds of content get banned or demonetized. But this is a terrible problem. You know, the internet is an incredible... A tool of incredible power, but it's a double-edged tool, right?
Most definitely.
And it's important for people to know that if you're relying on, say, Facebook for your news, your news is being filtered through Facebook's algorithm.
Exactly.
When you use Google to search something, as a search engine, to find something on the web, that's not a neutral tool.
No, it's being filtered through their algorithms.
Exactly. There's a filtering mechanism that we understand indirectly how it works. And in the same study, Avram Anderson and I, we looked at a week's worth of news as presented by Google News on LGBTQ issues, and a week's worth of news the same week using the same search terms on DuckDuckGo, another internet search engine, and we found radically different content coming
back
on our searches. Far more right-wing evangelical content presented as basically homophobic and transphobic content presented as news on Google News.
Right.
And we found almost none of that on DuckDuckGo. This is not an endorsement of DuckDuckGo, but just an example of how We can work indirectly to see some of the baked in, or what appear to be baked in biases of these search engines and other AI-driven content filters. Yep. And that we need to be aware of them to the extent that we aren't. We're not really, I would say, completely media literate, and we're not completely aware of how, of what, in effect, Project Censor would say is a 21st century definition of censorship that isn't simply about, oh, the government says this or doesn't say allow you to say this, or this right. editor won't let you publish that
different
story.
Kind of censorship.
It's old-fashioned notions of right. prior restraint and gatekeeping are still important, and we need to be aware of them.
Yes.
But the game is played at a higher level now.
Absolutely. There's a wealth of information at projectcensored.org. While you're there, pick up the book. It's the State of the Free Press 2022. This is what supports them, and we need their work, because thank you for bringing out this story. I thought I'd been going crazy, but I know it's not only me. Someone in the chat room just said David Pakman was demonetized by YouTube, and he's got 1.5 million listeners. So, you know, there's something going on there. Anyway, we are out of time. Andy Lee Roth, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back. There's tons to talk about here.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Pleasure to be in conversation with you today.
For me too. Thank you. Really appreciate it. And with that, I have to run because I have I'm taping an interview with Stephen Van Zandt in about 25 minutes. So so I usually end the show with the news. Today I'm going to tell you, go to NicoleSandler.com. Click on What's News, and you can hear the full extended version, which is longer than the version that runs all day on the Progressive Voices Network, because there was more news to tell. I just don't have time to play it today because I got to go talk to little Steven. So, you know, some things are more important than others. So I will just leave you. I will say thank you for listening, and put a good thought for the people of Ukraine. If you pray, do that. I'm not a praying person. I send out, you know, good, safe thoughts. Tomorrow, Howie Klein will be here, and we'll see what the day brings. Thanks. See you tomorrow. Bye.